Shell and the French oil giant, Elf Aquitaine, originally joined ExxonMobil in the Chad project. Then an Elf chief executive, Loïc Lefloche-Brigand, was indicted on embezzlement and international bribery charges. He was accused of skimming corporate funds and using some of them to pay off African and other overseas officials to win deals. "It was like that before me," Lefloche-Brigand claimed, "and my successors are doing it as well." Lee Raymond and his Dutch senior aide, René de Haan, once dined with Lefloche-Brigand in Paris and walked away shaking their heads. "I'm not doing that again," Raymond barked at de Haan. ExxonMobil had its flaws, but a transparent capacity for crookedness was not one of them. The scandal weakened Elf, led ultimately to a merger with Total, and forced ExxonMobil to find new partners in Chad. The Chad project had by now lasted 3 decades without producing a barrel of oil. It turned out to be a good example of long-term persistence, but a bad example of getting things done quickly, as Harry Longwell, Raymond's upstream lieutenant, put it dryly. The corporation finally roped in Chevron and Petronas of Malaysia as new non-operating partners. Chevron paid De Bie's government a signing bonus of about $25 million. The payment was not subject technically to the World Bank's rules, but De Bie had rashly pledged in public that he would apply the bank's formula to all of his revenue. He soon changed his mind. There were rumblings of rebellions in the West along his chronically troubled frontier with Sudan, near Darfur. De Bie felt he needed to shore up his regime's defense. He invested about $4.5 million in new military equipment before 2001 was out. After years of absence from Chad following the Cold War's end, the Central Intelligence Agency re-established a station in N'Djamena around the time that ExxonMobil decided to go forward with the oil project. The threat of terrorism gradually drew its officers back. Even before the September 11 attacks, Al-Qaeda menaced Africa. Osama bin Laden, the group's emir, lived in Khartoum, Sudan between 1992 and 1996. He funded violence in Somalia and Ethiopia and built up cells in Kenya and Tanzania. The vision of pan-Islamic risings bin Laden articulated reached the lightly governed regions of the Sahel, including northern Chad. From Sudan, Al-Qaeda financed weapons shipments across the desert to sympathizers in Libya and Algeria. The reopened CIA station in N'Djamena was partially intended to address this threat. The station was declared to De Bie's government, meaning that the intelligence officers posted to Chad were known to their counterparts in the Chadian security services. The station evolved into a security liaison operation through which the United States could covertly provide training and equipment to counterterrorism units created by De Bie for that purpose. After the September 11 attacks, the CIA and the Pentagon's Joint Special Operations Command no longer faced budget constraints. They charged into African capitals long neglected. At first, the coordination between the agency and the Pentagon in Chad and elsewhere in the Sahel was lacking. Deeply compartmentalized secrecy was the operational norm at both the CIA and within the Special Forces. In the early months of 2002, the CIA's Africa division sometimes learned what the Pentagon was up to only through the reports of its paid local agents. The Pentagon lacked the language skills, particularly French, to set up new special operations liaisons with host governments like Chad's without using translators. The translators would then be recruited as spies by the host government, so its leaders could keep track of what the Pentagon was planning. The CIA, running its own security liaisons, would hear about the Pentagon operators through the same translators. Once, in Ethiopia, local prostitutes were videotaped servicing American clients. The clients turned out to be special forces operators in the country without the knowledge of the local CIA station, which then had to smuggle the Pentagon personnel out of the country before they were arrested. Gradually, the coordination improved. General Stanley McChrystal, a graduate of West Point, took charge of the Pentagon's Joint Special Operations Command, which ran operations against Al-Qaeda in Africa. During the same period, after the September 11 attacks, CIA Director George Tenet appointed Mel Gamble, a longtime operations officer who had served in South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya, and Liberia, to run the Africa Division in the CIA's Directorate of Operations. McChrystal and Gamble worked together on a series of covert counterterrorism initiatives in Chad and elsewhere in the Sahel.
Terrorism was a rising star, recalled Karen Kwiatkowski, then a lieutenant colonel working on Africa policy at the Department of Defense in Washington. Oil, as the price increased, was a rising star.
It was natural for those like her, who were charged with crafting Africa's strategy at the Pentagon, to take their cues from the White House.
And certainly, she recalled, we knew what Cheney liked. We didn't understand the oil economy. What we knew is that these are ways to make your department more relevant to the national mission and the national priorities.
The Pentagon, seeking funding and relevance, assumed that the Bush administration would support a focus on counterterrorism and oil supply security.